Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara Shirinian, and we've also got here with us Rich Crawford.
I just have to say right now, Ara has a garbage can on the desk to hold up the microphone. Because
only the best here at KFNX.
I just need to make sure everybody knows that right now.
And we've also got here Adam Craver.
Hey, everybody.
From Captive Motion.
That's right. Back again.
Otherwise known as Mr. Captive Motion. And let's see, we've got, Alon's not here with us today, but he's lurking, and maybe he'll call in, and maybe I'll remember how to use the phone line and not hang up on him. So,
let's hope so.
Yeah, so let's get right to it. I've got, I think I've got some really interesting subjects for tonight. So there was, some time ago recently, there was a Leipzig Games Convention, Leipzig, that's in, Germany, for those who don't know. And so there were a couple of, on Kotaku, there was a couple of postings about some of the forums, or I guess lectures, you can call them lectures, about a few interesting things. So one of them was about storytelling in video games. So there's this one guy, his name's Ken Ralston, and he was a writer for Morrowind. And I assume he also wrote for Oblivion, although they didn't mention that, so maybe... I don't know. I don't know if they didn't like him too much after that, or if he did Morrowind and Oblivion 2 or what. And also this guy named Bob Bates, who did Unreal 2 and Spider-Man 3. And so here's a couple interesting...
Unreal has a storyline?
Unreal 2.
No, I was thinking Unreal Tournament, and I'm like, there's no story in that game.
Your lack of geekiness
but
is
But I really never played Unreal 2.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, like, I installed it once, and then it totally crashed, and then I didn't play it. So that was great. But... So they're talking about dialogue, and they had a few interesting things to say about dialogue. So Ken says, there's no chance I'll ever be able to do without it, but I will spend every resource I have not to not use dialogue, and I sneer patronizingly at cutscenes. So I thought that was kind of interesting because at least for games, I always thought like cutscenes were kind of like a cop-out in a way because they're not really interactive, and I don't know, at least for me, like I'm kind of a purist. So if I'm playing a game, if there's a portion where I'm not actually doing something, it's a staple of gaming convention for sure, right? But I think it's only because we haven't figured out any better way to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I wanted to do when I was working on some adventure games was, you know, really try to focus on ways to bring that storytelling into the gameplay while you're doing it. And I think, you know, we had a lot of discussions about this, you know, back at Rainbow. But it's difficult because it's, you know, it's not the way it's normally done. You know, normally you play through your level and then you get a cutscene that's, you know, that you don't even remember why, you know, you're having the cutscene because you've been playing through the level for 20 minutes and then you get to the next part of the level. And, you know, it seems to me that the story and the elements of that cutscene need to be, you know, interspersed throughout the entire level. So you always have that story element coming back to you while you're playing.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I want to come back to this. We're going to be also talking about BioShock later on the show, and that's the big news for today because it came out today, right?
Woohoo!
And everyone's got a hard on for that, right?
Dude, the game's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very.
Well, the
exciting.
Demo was awesome. At least.
Well, the demo, yeah. the 10 minutes I played was awesome.
Yeah. So what people have seen of it, anyway, everyone's very excited. So here's another quote. Bob Bates said, "Interactive dialogue is incredibly problematic from a player point of view. Players wonder if they should have gone another path." And this got me thinking a little bit. And this is kind of like, this is going to go toward also when we talk about this in relation to BioShock. There's something about like interactivity and choice that doesn't really mesh well at all with a narrative. And so I think this is what he's getting at with one of these things. It's like, you know, if the player knows they have a choice in the matter and if it's related to the narrative, right? So it's kind of like choose your own adventure. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming pretty much everybody did this when they had choose your own adventures. you know, you would, okay, I'm going to choose my path, and then, okay, I'm going to see what these other ones are, and I'm just going to, like, pick the one that I think is coolest and read that one. And, like, you kind of just want to explore the tree of all the choices, right?
Yeah, well, you also want to win when you're playing those books.
Right. You know, you go and you know, maybe you read the last page first, you know, you read all the endings, and then you work backwards, and, you know, it's kind of funny, but at the same time, it's like, you know, once the player knows that there's kind of, like, a structure there, at least that's implicitly exists to explore, even though the designer didn't intend for him to explore it, you're going to want to explore it, right? And there's not anything necessarily wrong with that, but at the same time, it really completely destroys any kind of, like, pacing or tempo that a narrative has.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rich?
I guess. I mean, I think it just kind of depends on the game, if it's done correctly or not. I mean...
Well, what's the point of a conversation tree that you have to go to all the leaves, right?
Well, you don't have to, right? But then, like, yeah, but, if it's there, you kind of want to.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but they don't design it so that you won't go to them all, right? You know, they don't have the best three that they know everybody's going to think is cool, and then they add the last two that they think are going to be lame, right?
Right.
You know, they want you to explore all the branches to see everything, you know. But if you have to do that anyways, why not have a tighter cutscene or a tighter in-game scene where it's, you know, a little bit faster pace and it gets you the information as opposed to drawing on these ridiculous stories like you get in a lot of these games.
Right. I mean, the choice thing's interesting because it's like, you know, I'm watching a movie and you don't think, well, I don't know, maybe sometimes you do when something happens and you're like, well, why did he do that, right? But it's not the same type of, like, evaluation that you go through in a game when you're like, well, okay, I chose this dialogue option and this guy ended up dying. And now you're wondering, okay, well, you know, how does this affect my game? Like, I don't really know, you know, did this bonus that I get, am I going to get a different bonus if I did something else? Is this going to change, you know, some event 4 hours later that I don't know about? There's, like, all these potential repercussions that, I guess if you've never played games before, or if you don't regularly play games before, then you're kind of, oblivious to it, and so that's kind of like a good thing in a way.
Yeah, but then again, you got, you know, games like Oblivion or Morrowind, which are fantastic games, but, you know, you end up, you know, if you're coming to these kind of games new, you're expecting an adventure, something where you get pulled into it and you always have something to do, but you end up spending a lot of your time, you know, clicking through branch after branch after branch, and it totally takes you away from the game of being this character in this world.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, one thing I found myself doing in Oblivion was, you know, oh, I'm going to do this quest, right? And then, I mean, this is totally, you know, subverting a lot of what the game is supposed to give you, but, you know, I'll find out what happens at the end of the quest, like, what do you get, right? And then, oh, okay, well, if you do this, you get this reward. If you do that, you get the other reward.
Yep.
And so, like, okay, well, I don't want this other reward. I want this. And, you know, part of that came from the fact that, like, okay, some quests are severely bugged, and so you can have, like, irrevocably bad things happen to your character for long-term progress if you do certain things. And then so you just have to, like, I don't know. It's there's nothing wrong with it, but at the same time, it just... It's not the same thing.
Well,
you know?
it's also a very old convention, right? I mean, we've had these kind of dialogue, you know, trees in games for as long as we've had adventure games, right?
Right.
So, you know, really, you know, what are the ways that you can approach the storytelling that are going to be new and innovative? And I think you were kind of hitting on the big one, is that it's the interactivity of the game that needs to inform the story as to what's happening, not, you know, this kind of arbitrary, do I pick A or B from a multiple choice, you know, option.
Well, I totally didn't realize I was getting there. That's really interesting.
You know, I can read your mind.
Tell me more. tell me more about what I'm saying.
Well, you don't want me to go any further because it's kind of embarrassing, Ara.
All right, so now that I've been embarrassed, yes, so let's see. They're also talking about story, and, you know, Ken goes, almost all the games that we do, almost all the games we have celebrate your adolescent and immature desire to be heroes in direct conflict with having more meaningful stories. And I thought that was kind of interesting. A lot of games are kind of, like, immature as far as, like, the depth of their stories, right? It's always like, oh, I want to be a kick-ass guy and do kick-ass things. And, like, we don't have a lot of other stuff.
That's true.
I don't know. We'll be back in a few minutes, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Ara Shrinian. We've got Rich Crawford and Adam Craver with us tonight. And Alon is...
Alon doesn't get a last name? You're doing last names for everybody else.
Alon, well, if he shows up, then he gets a last name.
Okay.
There you go.
But really, I mean, he's more like, you know, like Prince or Madonna.
He does have a last name, though.
And you know, I haven't gotten permission.
But so does Prince and Madonna.
And let's see, we were talking about story in games, and Rich said something kind of interesting in between all of the crass conversations we were having over the break. Actually, you know what?
Did I?
Yes, but before we get to that, and I almost forgot, we need to do some housekeeping, and some of that involves...
Housekeeping?
What's that school you go to, Rich?
I go to UAT.
UAT, it's a fantastic school. You should go there. It comes highly recommended by everybody on the show, even though two-thirds of us haven't gone there. And also, if you want to call in, we would love to have your call if you want to comment about anything we're talking about. Or if you just want to make up stuff, as long as it's video game related, that's pretty cool too. You can call us at 866-536-1100. We pay for the call, and unless you're calling internationally, and then you pay for the call. So what were we talking about, Rich?
Well, we were talking about the when we...
You said something very nice on the break that I really liked.
I'll try to repeat myself. But we were talking about how, like, the backstory in games is evil and very boring. And I was saying, like, when you load up a game and it's just, like, 10 pages of text or just, like, a really long dialogue and you're just like, oh, it's so annoying just to start up a game and have text forever and have to wait 15 minutes to actually play the game.
Yes, that doesn't
I think we can all agree on that.
Like, I mean, the amount of frustration that I experience when that happens to me, like, it's unbelievable.
Yep.
Like, Super Mario, what's the one that just came out? Super Paper Mario, right?
Oh, yeah, that game's terrible.
Right off,
that.
I mean, why would you do this? The least compelling thing about the game, right? You're just subjected to 20 minutes of before you get to what the hook really is, right?
But it's such fascinating conversation that you're listening to, right?
Ugh.
If I was really stoned or something, then I'd be like,
drug reference one.
Yeah, you know, that's really cool, bad.
And, yeah, but then it would seem like it takes twice as long.
And, you know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe they do it for stoners because, you know, you have to, like, take time to pack the bowl and stuff. And
I don't know. If I ever see a cute little face come up on the screen and then dot, 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 and another cute little face, and then a dot, 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 exclamation mark, and then another cute little face, dot, 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 question mark, I don't even know what that means, but it's annoying.
Yeah. Here's the really interesting thing is that after you've been playing the game for a while, right, there's a certain amount of that you can tolerate. But I think a person's tolerance for that in general is really, really low right off the bat. So I don't know why they do this right off the start with that stuff.
But I was going to say then, you know, some games do start well that don't just, like, throw a bunch of text at you. And I was saying God of War, in my mind, is kind of like one of the best examples that I can think of how it starts the game. I mean, it starts the game in a cutscene, in a cinema, but it does so in such a good way. Like, it starts with the main character jumping off a really tall cliff and killing himself, basically. And it's just like, it really stays with the whole Greek mythology storytelling style. And it's just like, it starts the game in the middle of this action. And it's just like, a lot of crazy stuff's going on. And this dude just died. And here's what happened. Go kill some people. And you're like, wow, this is really cool. Like, it just throws you in to the action, and you just, like, feel really cool playing as Kratos, like, right away. Like, it doesn't take forever. Like, oh, and then Kratos is this guy, and his family died, and he has colors on his skin.
I mean, first of all, it tells that story without words, which is nice.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's pretty brief, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of, like, it sets up a certain tension, like, you know, you're wondering what happened, you know, why did this guy do this, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then you're playing the game, right? So
it tells you what happened as you play the game, you know, just like you're playing the game progressively, and then it'll, like, clip back and, like, explain why you're killing all these people and why you're going after the gods, and, like, it's done so well. Like, it's just one of those games that isn't one of those just really bogged down in text and everything. It's just fast-paced the whole time, I guess.
Yep. All right, well, I actually had something really interesting to say about that, but, you know, I was too busy eating about 4 peyote buttons. So we're going to go on. there was another interesting panel at Leipzig, the Leipzig game conference. And this was about how press and hardcore influence developers. And this was really interesting to me because, you know, there's this post on Kotaku once again, where they were really framing this in terms of the developers are, you know, really, really receptive to the press, and you got to listen to your audience, and, you know, you got to, you know, take input from your consumers, which on the face of it, you know, sounds all good, right? But really what I think they're doing is just this gigantic smoke and mirror PR spin thing, because in my experience, what really happens at the developer is quite different. And I know Adam knows a bit about this. Here's a quote from this guy, Mike Capps from Epic Games. He said, "The press knows games, and they know what's going to sell."
Oh, boy.
All right, so if you could see the eyes rolling in the studio right now, the whole studio would probably roll over. There's, it's I don't know, this is just so patronizing to me. I mean, you know, like, you know, no, well, I was going to say no offense to the press, but, you know, I don't care about offending the press.
Aren't you the press, technically?
I was the press, so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, being Jewish and being able to make Jewish jokes.
Ah, okay.
Kind of thing, right? So, even though I'm not, so I won't make those jokes. But anyway, I will diss the press because, you know what, like, the press knows certain things about games, but they don't know really anything about making games. And being passionate about, you know, a certain, you know, whatever games has nothing to do with how much experience you have and knowledge and insight you have in the actual development of that.
Well, you know, a great example for, you know, the press not getting it, is that, you know, a lot of reviews and a lot of information that comes from the press doesn't seem to understand that there's a trade-off in features, that you have a limited amount of resources to work with
right.
to complete a game.
That's a really good point.
And you know, I think back to the reviews of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. Was that what it was called?
Yep.
Yeah. Fantastic game. And the reviews hammered on it because it didn't
that
have multiplayer.
Awesome.
But it was an amazing game. And, you know, IGN, well, we knocked it off a point for this, and another guy knocked it off a point for that, and you know, it lowered their cumulative reviews for a feature that, if they had taken the time to put in it, the single-player game would have suffered immensely. You know, the amount of time to create these features that you know, the consumer or the press say that they have to have has to come from somewhere. There's a balance. There's a trade-off.
Right. So here's a revelation to everybody out there who maybe thinks that the developers are listening to you. They're not really listening to you, because most of the feedback from the fans and from the press are they're just ridiculous for one of several reasons. Adam raised a good reason. I'm just going to go through my reasons, and then Rich sounds like he wants to say something. But yeah, so, you know, you're totally right about that, right? They don't understand the impact of what they're suggesting. A lot of times also, you know, people, especially just consumers, no matter how hardcore they are, they're usually not able to articulate what they really want,
yep.
Right? I'm always my favorite example to give out is there's a Simpsons episode where they had a focus group about a TV show, right? And they had you know, a bunch of kids in this room, and they said, "Okay, kids, now which one of you guys like, you know, fantastical, far out situations with, you know, superheroes and monsters and dragons?" And everyone went, "Me, me, me." And they're like, "Okay, now, how many of you guys like realistic, down-to-earth situations about, like, I don't know, something totally opposite?" And everyone else, just with as much vigor and enthusiasm, was like, "Me, me, me, me." And that's the thing. I mean, people, a lot of times when they express what they want, they'll usually want things that, you know, they're mutually exclusive. So you
yeah.
can't have both, but they
well,
want both.
I've actually got an entertaining anecdote about focus tests and that exact same kind of thing. We were working on Splashdown, Rides Gone Wild,
uh-huh.
and Atari had done a focus group revolving around Splashdown 1. And one of the things that they asked were, you know, how important is it to you that this game has a four-player split screen? And this is for the PlayStation 2 at the time.
Right.
And, you know, everybody in the room said, it absolutely has to have that. And so then later on they asked, you know, how many of you actually own a game tap? Or was it the multi-tap?
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that you could actually play four players.
Right.
And one kid raised his hand. So, you know.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is that in a focus test situation, right, the way the question's framed, a lot of times determines the answer.
Yep.
And so if you frame the question of like, well, would you rather have A or not A? I mean, like, what? Like, yeah, I'll take A. You know?
Yep.
Do you want pepperoni on your pizza or do you want nothing on your pizza?
Cheese is good.
Okay, well, richly. We'll be back, everybody.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Ara Sherinian, and we've got Rich Crawford and
Hello.
Adam Craver.
Hey, everybody.
And we've got, I think Alon maybe.
Can you press the right?
On the
press
phone.
The button.
Let's see if Ara presses the right button. Okay, here we go. Alon, are you there?
Can anyone hear me?
Fantastic. Hey. All right, I'm so glad I didn't hang up on you.
This is Alon Awana Ding Dong. Hi, everybody.
All right, let's not all respond at once.
All right.
How's it going, Alon?
It's great. So, what are we talking about on this show? I mean, I've been listening, but it's been pretty silent for the last minute.
Well, let me do a little housekeeping before we actually get back to our topic.
Housekeeping.
But if anyone wants to call in, you know, if you don't like what we're saying, or if you do like what we're saying, or whatever, you can call us at 866-536-1100. You can also visit the Chatterbox website at chatterboxgameshow.com. And there's a fancy little, IRC interface there you can go on so you can chat with all the chatters on there if you're...
Chat.
If you're too... okay. So, getting back to the topics, we kind of got cut off and Rich wanted to say something before we got to break last time. So what's going on, Rich?
I was
going
to point out, Adam was talking about how Riddick didn't have the multiplayer and the press kind of ridiculed him for it. And their new game, the Starbreeze Studios Darkness, has multiplayer and it's absolutely terrible. So, like, obviously somebody told them they needed to put multiplayer in and they did it, and they did it very poorly. So, like, they could have just not listened to anybody and done a single-player game, and it probably would have been better.
Now, Ara, you have experience making a game where multiplayer was just tacked on at the end, don't you?
Well, it depends on what game you're talking
it
about,
depends.
Actually.
It
Are you
I
talking
just asked
about
if you had experience doing
something
that.
About
Are you talking
Red
about Red Star,
and
or
Star?
Are you talking about the project I'm working on now?
All you have to do is answer the question.
Yes.
Okay. And how did that turn out for you?
Not as good as if we didn't have to do it.
I gotta tell you, I had more fun playing Red Star with another person, even though it was more difficult.
Multiplayer was fun.
Yeah.
And then we died a lot.
Well, you know, actually on Red Star, it was supposed to be a multiplayer game from the beginning, but the, I don't know, there's actually a lot of interesting balancing issues and problems that come up in an action game. If you actually care about, you know, the balance and the pace of the game when you have multiplayer, because, you know, sometimes you'll have two people and your firepower is twice as much, and then what if one guy dies, right? And you kind of have to, like, you know, scale the enemies accordingly, right? But then depending on what's going on, you know, like if you're at a boss, you know, it's not really trivial, right? Because, like, the boss is there and you have two people and now you have one person, and it's not really reasonable to ask, like, the first player to, you know, now, like, inflict all this damage that the other second player would have done. But then on the other hand, like, it's really weird if you kind of, like, scale the boss's hit points down and don't tell the player, and, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of that trickery going on.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was pretty impressive about how Gears of War worked, was that it was co-op regardless of whether you were playing it as a single player or a two player game.
Yeah.
So have you
Wait, Adam, did you just say it was co-op even when you're playing single player?
Yeah.
You have the different people on your team, but when you play co-op, the other person just takes over that person.
That's you know what? Like maybe they did that to get around that issue.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what they did.
Although personally, I was most impressed with the fact that during one of the cutscenes, if you press the fire button, you'd have the bullets fly out of the cinematic camera.
Really?
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. There's one cutscene where they forgot to disable that, and there's just people talking, and there's this camera floating around. And it just shoots bullets out of the middle of it. And this guy's trying to talk, and he's, like, getting pelted.
I got to play it again now to find that cutscene.
Yeah, it's right after the Berserker, I think. Either right after or right before. Anyway, getting to more important
Back on topic.
Hey, we're always on topic here at Chatterbox. Except when we don't talk about video games. BioShock, the game of the day. So, you know, I've got actually a lot to say about it, but I'm going to let... one of you take the reins for the time being.
It's awesome.
Okay, come on. It's awesome. Come on. Tell me something more.
Has Alon played the demo yet? Or is he gone?
Unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to.
Oh, well, you're not going to like it at all.
Yeah. It's too bad. You should play it as soon as possible.
You guys get your gushing out now so I can start criticizing
the game? Okay.
Get to play it at Penny.
Like I was saying, the Gears of War, or God of War, sorry. Like, how it starts you, like, in the game. Like, I don't know, I thought it was really cool the way BioShock starts, where you're in the plane and it crashes, and then your character's underwater, and then you just slowly rise up, and then I'm like, okay, now what?
No, that was really nice.
And then
I'm
like, am I
playing?
Can move?
Oh, I'm playing.
And I was like, awesome, this looks sweet. And it was just like, I didn't even know what was going on. Yeah, but then you go through, like, a scene that's kind of too long about the backstory of the whole city, and then...
What do you mean it was too long? That was the... What, you mean like when you're going down the
bathroom?
Down
the elevator.
Escape?
I was just like, go faster.
Really? I actually thought that was one of the most interesting parts of the demo, because I'm like, well, first of all, you're like, what the F is this? Right? You know, you're walking into this room, it's dark.
And then the lights just go, koosh, and they shut off, and you're like, what?
Right, and then the lights come on, the lights turn off. You're going down into this elevator, like, you have no idea what to expect. I thought that was actually one of the most tense part of the whole demo.
Yeah, it had a very lost feel to it, particularly in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
And I really loved just the whole artistic style, like this 50s Art Deco style.
Oh, yeah.
Because I am so sick of, you know, okay, generic,
photorealistic,
like,
graphics.
Well, no. Not just that, but, like, okay, like, you know, yeah, we saw Aliens and we copied the sci-fi look from there.
Yeah, how many metal corridors have we all run down in our games in our lifetimes? You know, thousands of miles worth of identical corridors.
Yeah, or just, like, you know, the Tolkien, you know, oh, there's fantasy unicorns and horses and orcs and stuff. And, you know, all that stuff's really tired. So I thought that the visual look was really, I mean, that was just, like, totally right on, you know, very, very fresh, very nice.
Definitely. The demo was awesome. I mean, I played it 3 times, and it was awesome every time.
So tell us how you really feel, Rich.
I think the game's really fun, and I can't wait to play the whole game. Like, everything I've heard about it, everything I've seen, the demo I played, like, the whole experience was just awesome. You have the different plasmids and the different weapons, and you're fighting the different guys. And it's like, I played it several times. And, like, even in the demo, I killed them differently each time. Like, the first time, I hacked 2 of the turrets, and then they were, like, following me around and shooting all the enemies as they were coming down. And then the second time, I didn't do that, because I took out the sensor first before they started attacking me. And then, like, when they were coming down, I would just shock the water. Like, they would jump down into the water, and then I would just kill them by shocking them.
Yeah,
or I would start them on fire, and then they jump into the water, and then I electrocute them. Like, it was so cool to do that over and over again.
Over and over.
Well, I mean, I played the demo 3 times.
So. Yeah, actually, you know, it's really interesting. I got a very, very much of a Deus Ex feel from it. That was the same hook that Deus Ex had, right?
It was System Shock 2 was the last game the developers did.
Yeah, Ken Levine is the project director. He was the lead designer on System Shock 2.
Yep.
So it's you know, System Shock, BioShock.
Ooh.
You know, yeah.
Oh, really? It's the same person, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
It's some of the same people, and obviously they've grown since then, but it's kind of the same style, but way cooler.
Let me tell you guys something interesting that it was kind of like, I don't know. This is going to be a criticism, but it was kind of serendipitous the way this happened. So I'm playing this game, right? And don't give me that look,
serendipitous?
Rich. Yes.
You say you don't use big words that nobody knows.
I'm getting cash for every word that I say over 13 letters on the air, so
okay.
I'm going to make use of that. All right.
Which people do know what serendipitous means. Well, just not you.
I'm just.
Oh, burn.
It's all not right. A word that anybody would say in a conversation.
Okay, let's get. No. Let me get this in before we get to the break coming up. Yeah, I was playing. I'm starting to play the game, and I'm like, wow, you know what? Even though this is in widescreen, right? Like, my view just feels really narrow. I swear. I'm just like, wow, you know, like, I feel like I have to, you know, turn around a lot back and forth. And then I find out, I go to Kotaku, and they're like, oh, you know what, guys? Widescreen? Yeah, you can't see more on the left and right. You actually see less up and down.
Yeah.
So that was pretty lame.
Well, there's actually probably some real good reasons for that. We'll talk about them when we come back.
I agree. And we'll be back in a little bit, guys. Back. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Ara Sherinian. We've got Rich Crawford.
Hello.
Adam the Craver.
Mr.
And
Captive Motion.
Mr. Captive Motion.
And the one and only Alon. Is Alon still around?
I'm here, everybody.
There we go.
Yay.
Okay. So I just want to tell everyone, if you're looking for a school to go to, maybe you've got a lot of time on your hands. Maybe you're just bored out of your mind. I don't know. You've run out of drugs or something. You can go.
Is that the fourth reference?
You can go enroll at UAT. You can learn about games and game design. It's a fantastic.
By the way, Dry school. Campus. Now, I also want to mention, when you're at UAT, they give you time off so you can go do things like see the Penny Arcade Expo.
Woo!
Right, Rich?
Oh yeah.
Now
it's tomorrow.
Are we going to do something there?
It's going to be crazy. We're gonna
do a big event.
We're gonna have
the
treasure box
with us.
It's gonna be awesome.
The arcade stuff going on. I'm gonna be moderating a forum there on Friday.
Oh yeah, about storytelling
and games. Yeah, and on Sunday we're also doing a Family Feud simulation, which they even talked about on the Penny Arcade website just this past Friday. So anyone who's actually heading down there should go see us both Friday and Sunday. Rich and I will both be there. Unfortunately, has to stay back and make sure that he builds entertainment for everyone to enjoy over the Christmas holiday.
I can't wait for Cars 2 to come out.
This is true. Well, I'm touched. I really am.
Because I really want to play Cars 2 instead of every other game that's coming out.
What? Do I detect the hint of sarcasm there?
BioShock, Call of Duty 4, Halo 3.
Yeah, you just
Mass
wait.
Effect.
You just wait until you see my tracks in Cars 2, and then
wait.
And then we'll see who's going to be eating their shoes. You're going to be like, wow, this is so much better than BioShock. I shouldn't have even bought this game before.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, before the break, we were talking about the widescreen mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a funny thing, right? Now, a lot of people are complaining online that in widescreen, it's not really widescreen because instead of giving you more space on the sides, it actually crops from the top and bottom, which, you know, aspect ratio-wise is equivalent, but you actually end up seeing less. Now, the funny thing is that, like, everyone's complaining about the wrong thing. Now, the reason why this is bad is not because, like, it screws up, like, the framing in a cutscene. The reason why it's bad is because it gives you less visibility, and it's almost like if you're playing a game and you're zoomed in close, right? You have to turn more to see things and stuff like that. You know, it's actually like I said, when I started playing the game, like, I actually felt like there was, like, you know, it's widescreen, but it felt like it was more by, like, 4:3, and that was why. And the funny thing, too, is that they're all saying, you know, they're all talking about, like, speculating about reasons of why they do this and why they don't do this, and there are some reasons that I think nobody is talking about at all about why the developer would do this. I think Adam knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, we actually ran into a similar problem on one of our games where we had a widescreen and a 4:3 mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, we ultimately had to do something very similar because if you want to go from a 4:3 aspect ratio to a widescreen and you simply make the field of view wider, you are rendering a significant amount of more objects.
Right.
You
exactly.
can see more of the environment. And so now, again, it comes to this, you know, what I mentioned earlier, the trade-offs, you know, versus, you know, do you want a great frame rate or do you want to see a little bit wider and not as good of a frame rate?
Right.
I'll take the better frame rate any day. But I also think it may have been a real choice to narrow that field of view, given the environment of the game. Right, you're in a city underwater. It's claustrophobic. You know, the walls are in tight. And by having that slightly narrower field of view, you know, I felt fairly claustrophobic and closed in when I was playing it.
They could have done it on purpose. I think the main reason is the technical reason.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I really wish I could see more, but then again, you know. I want to have the 360 view like you did on Marathon 2 when you have that special power-up, which was really sweet. So what do I know? Yeah. So, oh, man, what else? Oh, yeah, we were going to talk about the art direction for this game. One thing that I thought was really, really cool, really awesome, was that it seems very clear to me that the developers for this game, particularly the artists, or at least the art director, was not afraid to do things that were less realistic for the sake of gameplay. And by that I mean, like, you know, colors for one thing, right? But for another, you know, like all the pickups are oversized. I think mm-hmm. that's really, really good. I'm really glad they did that, you know? At first I'm like, oh, there's this gun in the baby carriage. You're like, whoa, this gun's huge. But then, I mean, like, that's, you need to do that because if there's this little tiny gun, like, you don't want to be, like, squinting your eyes trying to find the pickup here or there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I thought that's exactly the kind of direction games need to go in, you know? I'm sick and tired of all these developers having a hard-on for realism at the cost of everything because they don't do that in movies, even though for some reason people tacitly think they do. Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay, agreement all around.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. All right.
It's much better. The style that they use is way better.
Well, you know, when it comes to pickups, you know, if you've got an ultra-realistic game, you know, pickups are just not real to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, how often do you see floating
right, well,
ammo boxes spinning around in the real yeah. world or, you know, just guns littering the environment everywhere? You know, why not, you know, build that into the story and just make it a part of the game rather than the, oh, I've got to, you know, push the joystick to the left to get that pickup. It seems like I can't even talk, so I'm not going to try the big word.
Superfluous.
Superfluous.
Cha-ching. That's
yeah, there you go. There's your money, man. I helped you out there.
All right. So, yeah, it's like, the beauty of a video game is that you can make those kinds of accommodations, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's if you try to make everything realistic, then I feel it's really limiting. It's actually the opposite of what people think realism achieves. You know, that's why I used that really big word last time that I'm going to use again. It's not about realism. It's about verisimilitude. Which means that it's not about something looking exactly real. It just it's good enough if you buy it, if you believe
yep.
that it's
oh,
true.
Yeah. It's
right?
believable.
Yep.
Right.
BioShock
and that has,
is believable.
And there's no room for realism in that.
Yep. I mean, BioShock isn't real. Like, there's these mutated people and this Big Daddy's with a drill on his hand. Like, that's not real. But like, when you're playing the game,
well, it depends where you grew up.
It's
actually.
Believable. Like, you just like. This thing exists in this world, and I need to not die from it.
Yeah, and look what it just did to that guy
yeah.
who was messing with
that
it.
That drill just went through his stomach. Oh, man.
Yeah, so another thing I thought was kind of interesting, I'd be curious what you guys think, actually, is that there was almost like so much ambient sound effects in the game that, and I don't know if they really did this on purpose or not, but it was really hard for me to tell if there's something else in the room at the same time or not.
Yeah.
Like the sounds, I don't know, they're just like so crunchy that I thought, I'm like, you know, every ambient sound I heard is like, is there someone there? Like, I really
yep.
wasn't sure.
Yep.
So it was
and
really
you've got
hard
that,
for me
that
to
narrow
tell.
I like
you
that,
and you're
though.
Whipping around
and,
trying to.
And that too. So I don't know. Maybe they did that on purpose.
I thought that was really cool.
I thought that was kind
like,
of uncomfortable
personally.
Is there
a dude around the corner? Is there a guy behind me? Like, this guy's in the room. I don't know where he's at. I'm hearing stuff. I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
Personally.
And I thought they did this weird fancy thing with the, no one else will complain about this but me, but, you know, the moving and turning controls, actually really mostly the turning and looking controls, they just, like, they have this weird, like, non-linear ramp to them that I thought was just kind of bizarre. And
huh, I didn't even notice
I didn't notice.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I noticed that the both times that blew me away was when you get the first plasmid and you start shaking and
yeah.
time. You start shaking and shaking, then you fall over the ledge.
Yeah.
And the joystick is vibrating. You hit the ground and it dead stop in your hands at the same... It
PS3 can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, guys. Another episode in the can. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.